it's Friday night, and Brian is over top of me right now. Basically, what has happened is we're having he's in the middle of a field. No, he's out in the middle of nowhere, so we just have him on audio. But welcome to the journey. Guys, we're glad that you're back with us this week. We have an amazing gift for you guys just to hear what the Lord has done in another person's life, not just our own. And really just even the little bit that I've encountered has stretched me and helped me to let go of where I was and let God start to teach me in new ways. John has met Brian. They've actually hung out. Also, just to let you guys know, I'm going to have his website posted. You can go there throughout the night, donate, bless him for being on the show. You know, that way you can just send money directly to him through PayPal. It's on his ministry. I'm sure he can mention that too. Also, if you guys want to be a part of what we're doing here weekly, you guys can do that. You can go to our website, www.hcm-stratford.org, and there's a PayPal button. You can help us to continue to do what God's called us to do, and I believe that's pretty much the announcements. John's probably just finishing sharing, and we are going to exit solo mode here, and then I will add the picture of Brian because it's the closest that we're going to get tonight.
Yeah.
There we go. There we go.
Nice. I mean, we may pick up something later. We'll see just what happens towards the end. But at least this way, we don't get the interruptions. So I just wanted to start by introducing a little bit Brian, my experience of meeting Brian Christian. We'd talked over the internet a few times. I had a few meetings with Larry Pearson and myself. And got to know Brian and Shauna, his wife. And then we went to New York to a conference Brian was doing to hook up and really get to spend some time together. And what I wanted to say was about that, there was Larry and Jacqueline Pearson and my wife Susan and I. And Susan and I had been through experiences where lots of us have, where... let's just say the wine press in Christianity in churches and stuff that we've been involved in, you know, feeling abandoned, different things that had happened to us. And when we first started in 81, we really felt a sense of family in Christianity. And we hadn't seen that for a while. It seemed really very... more of an organization than it was the experience of community or family. And the wildest thing is when we went there, I kid you not, Corey, the people, all of the people that were involved with Brian that would come together wherever he goes, we just felt instantly loved and embraced. And I'm not talking about somebody going, hey, love you, brother. It's I didn't know anybody, and they treated me like one of their friends.
Yeah.
It's like, but it was more than that. I can't even explain it. There is a love that was real. Jesus' love was real there. And Susan just, and my wife, you know, she's one that's much more sensitive to things than me. And she said to me, man, there was such healing for me just being there. I got to have hope and believe once again in the family of God. You know, it's one thing to love God and follow the Lord, but it's another thing to have to deal with all the excess stuff that goes on, judging and you know what, right?
Yeah, and it's also just the idea that someone actually cares and they're not wearing a greeter's badge or they haven't been trained to care, that changes the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And it's real. It's a real body of Christ, not just a gathering.
Right. That's what it was. And I think a lot of people had been broken and have come together, and what we felt was the unconditional love of God.
That's amazing.
And people really seeking after the kiss, the experience of the kiss of God. And so I just want to honor you and Sean and Brian for, you know, you're going to share some of your testimony tonight of how you got here, because you too walked a journey like the rest of us coming out of whatever, and just the place you've got to where it had to be real. It isn't enough to read a book on a kiss. It's about the kiss and the experience of it. And I love what you guys are doing. You're traveling all over the U.S. In a motorhome. Maybe you want to share a little bit about that, about what you're doing.
Well, thank you, John. I just, I'm right now just really moved by what you're sharing, because, you know, it's one thing to be on this side of it. It's another to see how people's lives are transformed through the love of the Father. Yeah. And, you know, what's amazing is we're just being ourselves, you know. There's no masks, there's no facades, there's no need to measure up. And it took me a long time to come into that place, a very long time. But to kind of give an overview here, and yeah. I just really am thankful for the opportunity to be with you guys today and to share with the community that the Lord is connecting through mm-hmm. your ministry. We took off. In fact, when Sean and I got married, it will be 13 years this July. We had a vision of an RV, and what's funny is neither one of us had ever been in an RV. We had no idea what we were getting into or doing. And so I had this vision, and so we got a fifth wheel. And when we got married and we got hitched in Vegas. Funny story in and of itself, but the only place that would take us in, because they were booked, was this place called Allure, and it had like a half naked lady on the sign. and I think God has a sense of humor. We get there and it's closed. We're due to get married any minute, and we took a couple people with us, and we wanted to have the big wedding, but we were just kind of like, you know what, we just don't have the cash for that. We'd rather have 3 months of a honeymoon than spend $10,000 on 5 minutes of saying I do. So we waited, and a lady came in, and she apologized for being late. And she looked at us and she says, "Oh my God." I said, "What?" She says, "Well, the reason I'm late is I just came from Oakland, California, where my spiritual father, Rod Parsley, was ministering. And the Lord told me years ago to start up this place here and call it Allure. And I really have not met any couples that I ever felt the Lord had even put them together. You know, but you're the first couple that I feel like God has ordained." And she just began to prophesy over us, anoint us with oil. I mean, of all places, you know, I was waiting for Elvis Presley to step in and start prophesying. I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. And
that's crazy.
But we headed out in our fifth wheel with the vision of traveling all over in ministering. Now, when we took off, I had just come out of a ministry where God was moving powerfully. There was a tremendous move of the Spirit, 14 to 16 hours a day, 6 days a week for almost two solid years in Silicon Valley, California. And it was a move of God that drew people from different nations. It drew Mike Bickle's team to come and get impartation. Bill Johnson's church came and got impartation. And it was an amazing glorious time. And, you know, during that time I was connected with Benny Hinn and some of these other ministries and, you know, sitting with them on the platform. And, you know, it had been over 20 years to get to that place. And I thought, this is the place where I'm going to rest. That was what I believed. Yep. I had arrived. And, you know, and so, you know, it was a glorious time. It was a lot of prosperity and glory and blessing and instantaneous miracles and signs and wonders and so forth. And I was previously married. And so, you know, there was situations begin to happen. And anyway, it ended up me and my wife got a divorce, but we were going to continue to do the ministry together. And well, the church flipped out on that and said, no, you can't do that. And just to kind of backtrack a little bit more, when I got into this marriage, I was trying to be submitted at a church. And it was probably the only times I thought I was actually being obedient in this area of relationship. And the pastor said, I feel like God's calling you guys together. And there was an attraction. It was good. And I do believe we were called together for ministry, but we took it into marriage and it just didn't work. And so in our hearts, it was kind of like, let's get back in alignment. Right. You know, but I also understand the way in which, you know, this culture kind of views that as, you know, well, God can't use you anymore because you've been divorced or, you know, you're disqualified now.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went through that. Well, it wasn't long after that that Shauna and I actually got together. I thought it was the devil. I thought, no, this is the devil. This is another trick, another trap. And, but then another part of me was like, well, what the heck? My life's already screwed up. I might as well go for it. And so, I went ahead and just, jumped in, completely and kind of expected the worst. And I have to be perfectly honest. If it wasn't for my wife, Shauna, the one I'm with, I would not be the man I am today. Wow. It was her life as a new believer that loved me and received me, even though I was about ready to have a breakdown right after we got married. And so now hold that thought, because yep. I just want to give you guys just some history of why there was so many struggles in my life. And then we'll yes. go on from there.
Yeah, but that's good.
But I'm trying to sum up a lot. This would take three encyclopedias to give my whole testimony. But I grew up in a home that obviously didn't know God in their personal experience, and Catholic on my mom's side, Mormon on my dad's side, but neither, they were backslidden Catholics and Mormons. Okay. If you want to call it that. Yeah. and so I grew up in a very abusive place. We're talking locked in closets, smothered with pillows, starved the first 4 years of my life. Watching my dad as he was drunk beat my mother. I was, you know, when my dad found out my mom was pregnant with me, he kicked her in the stomach with steel toe boots over and over again to abort me. So I was brought into this world in a lot of rejection. My own mother rejected me because I was supposed to be a girl in her eyes. And so this is how it started. And I had siblings, but they're the youngest sibling that's older than me is about 8 years older. So it was 8, 9, and 10 years difference because I have three older siblings. So they're off doing their own thing. But wow. I watched some pretty horrendous things that my dad did. I'll give you one example because I don't want to go into too much detail on the dark side, but I also right. want people to understand what trauma does. Yes. And so when, my older, two older brothers, didn't listen to my dad, he took them out to the barn and took me with them, so that I could watch and learn the lesson. And then he put electrical cords up over the rafters and hung them until they almost died by their necks. And, I had to watch that. Okay. Wow. There were other events in which we were held by gunpoint while my dad did tremendous things to one of my aunts in front of everybody, which I won't go into detail about. But this was my upbringing. I was told I wasn't supposed to be born. I was an accident. It would be better if I was dead. This is what I was told on a daily basis. Okay. You didn't love each other. You didn't sit on each other's lap. There was no affection. All right.
Right.
So this was my childhood. So then my mom escapes the abuse and she marries my stepdad, who introduces me to pornography at the age of 6 and to marijuana, of which this is before the big say no to drugs. I know my mom was kind of ignorant of all of that, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, it led, you know, Santa Claus, you know, usually brings kids toys and candy in their stockings, but I got, you know, marijuana, LSD, and magic mushrooms in my stocking. Oh, and so I was the family experiment. Okay. see what happens if we do this. Again, I don't blame my parents. They were completely ignorant in their own brokenness. Yeah. So nobody take up any offense on my, for my sake, that's for sure. And so I had no purpose. That whole childhood experience followed me. So in that place, I used the drugs to hide my pain, but I also was trying to find God through them. I knew that I had something supernatural about me, but I didn't understand what. So I was, of course, drawn into the dark side and started going into occultism also at the age of six. Going, you know, with the Ouija boards and the tarot cards and giving my life to the, to Satan at the age of six. And so went through that. Of course, in my family, they didn't care about that. My mom even did some of it with me. That was my pursuit. You know, I know there's something bigger than this, but of course I was drawn into where my mindset was broken.
Right.
And so at the age of 16 and a half, I'm playing with my Ouija board. Now you got to understand the anger of me. I'm filled with hatred and anger. And so, out of my own self-hatred. So, you know, I had two younger stepbrothers, half brothers at this point, from my stepdad. And so I would torture these kids, you know, I mean, I would, you know, just chase them around, scare them, you know, do things like that, embarrass them in front of my friends, shame them. And I think I was the day that I had my first encounter with God consciously, I was chasing them around the house with a drill. My mom told me, you know, you need to, you know, stop doing that. And I, you know, proceeded to cuss at her and tell her what was going to happen. So by this time I'm running the house. My mom and dad are locking their door at night because they're afraid I'm going to kill them. They tried to have me committed and, I threatened them and, you know, they couldn't do that. And so I'm pretty much in charge of the house. What I say goes, under fear and threat. So after I threatened my mom, I go sit down at the dining room table with my Ouija board, and it was the only thing I would listen to. Funny thing is, about 2 weeks before that day happened, two guys came to my front door I used to deal drugs to. Both of their names, John. Mm-hmm. And they came to me, and they're smiling. I said, "Hey, where you guys been, man? You want to get high? You know, you want to buy some dope?" And they're like, "No, we just came to tell you that... according to Matthew 18:18, if you shall agree, it shall be done. And we've already agreed that you're going to be saved. So you might as well give up." And I just looked at them and laughed, and I snapped my fingers and doors and windows would start slamming and opening and closing, as you know, demonic manifestations around me would begin to manifest. I said, "Look, I got more power than you." And they did, they ran because they didn't understand what was going on. And so I took that as a justification. Still had no clue who Jesus was. My eyes were completely closed. Now, fast forward a few weeks after I'm chasing my brothers around with a drill, and I sit down with the Ouija board, and I go to use my Ouija board, and all of a sudden it spells out the word repent. And I said, "Repent? What is this?" And this mist of water came out of nowhere. I mean, like somebody sprayed a water bottle, you know, and it hit me, and I was paralyzed for 30 minutes, shaking and weeping for everything I had ever done to my family, to myself. And I had no idea that it was God at the time. I didn't know what it was, but waves of the presence of God just billowed over me.
Wow.
And I still get emotional as I think about that. And it spelled out an address and a time and said, "Go and I will be with you." Well, I thought it was my spirit guide.
Yeah.
So you got to imagine this 16 and a half year old, messed up, half baked guy with a Harley Davidson shirt on and tie dye jeans, because it is the 80s.
Yeah.
And I got my left ear pierced with an upside down cross in it. And I walk into this address that was given to me that was Assemblies of God Church in Sacramento, or Orangevale, California, inside of Sacramento.
Right.
And to be perfectly honest, looking back, the church was dead spiritually. I mean, it was just dead. But I came in and sat down, and I couldn't move. I couldn't think. I couldn't even understand anything the preacher was saying. Everything was muffled. All I heard was these internal voices, get out of here. They're going to kill you. And I felt choked. But all of a sudden, everything disappeared and went white. And I seen these hands that were the size of a building come down, and there were holes in them, and they were coming towards me. Now, I don't know what that meant in my mind at the time. I had no understanding. But you got to realize, I came out of the place of drinking blood and sacrifices and these kinds of things in occultism. So to see blood filling hands coming out of holes in a hand, you would think, okay, that's a blood sacrifice. But I didn't see it that way. I just knew if I could get to that, I would be okay. That's all I knew. And next thing you know, the vision leaves, and I and the pastor says, and whoever wants to be forgiven and cleansed in his blood, come forward. And I just ran without thinking. I ran to the front. They took me in a back room. I prayed the sinner's prayer. Still had no idea what the gospel was. I had encountered it, but I had no cognitive, you know, paradigm to understand it or grasp it. And so I left that place ear to ear smiles. I had some, I had major permigrin going on, and it was way better than the dope I had ever had.
Yeah.
And I'm, I had to walk home, and it's about a mile walk. And, I can see everybody. I can see those that are awake and those that aren't. Those that aren't look dead. And it was like, why do some of these people look dead, but others, there's this light coming out of them. I was already discerning. Wow. So, you know, I come home, and of course, my newfound faith was not received by my family. They liked the old Brian, even though it was a fearful Brian. That Brian did drugs and dealt drugs to him. And so I was kicked out. I was kicked out and disowned. I got emancipated at the age of, I got emancipated at 15. But I still lived at home. And so at 16 and a half, I'm out on my own, legally 18, by the court's rule of emancipation. And so I'm living from house to house. I'm now on fire for God. I'm ready to save the whole world. And and I'm just, I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. And anyway, I went back to church, and they just kind of said, no, we can't, you don't belong here. So I tried to fit in, and I never fit in. I was the guy weeping at the altar in youth group when all the other kids are out playing sports during the youth services. And there was no real emphasis on seeking God, but I'm there seeking God. I'm prophesying. I'm having angelic visitations from day one. And, so I was rejected by my family. Now I'm rejected by the church. And so I didn't know what to do with myself. So fast forward to 17 and a half years of age, I decide I'm going to go plant a church. So I go out and I plant a church. And of course, I don't know what I'm doing. And so because I still have all of this brokenness is still there.
Yeah.
You know, my history hasn't been dealt with in my perception. So I'm now trying to please God, hoping that if I obey everything, that I'll measure up to being worthy of being loved by the Father. Because that's how it was taught in the 80s, was this angry, wrathful God.
Yeah.
And you got to measure up. If you don't obey, you're going to give a foothold to the devil and all of this. And so I was so demon focused. And so I ended up, the ministry fell apart. Of course, I think it lasted maybe 6 months before I destroyed it. And so now you got to understand, when I first was awakened, I had God speak to me. And he said this, he said, I've called you as a father to many. I've called you as a uniter of the church to bring unity. And, what was the third thing? I called you to restore marriages. Okay. This is what he told me. That was my commission. Wow. And he gave me the scripture, Jeremiah 1:5, where it says, before I knew you in the womb, I ordained you a prophet to the nations. And the other scripture is in Acts. I don't remember the reference where it's at, but It was where God spoke to Paul and said, I will show him what things he will suffer for my name's sake. Now, I didn't put two and two together in that time of what I was about to walk through for the next 17 years of ministry. And so this is a crazy scene, because you got to understand, on the outside, I looked like this total lunatic who's on fire for God, but has broken relationships everywhere he goes. Okay. Yeah. And so I rush out, I get married, and I have my daughter. She's in the womb at the time, and I'm so excited. I'm so excited about my daughter. I'm just so excited to be a father. And I'm just telling everybody, I'm quoting scriptures over her, I'm praying over her. And I'm actually praying for babies around this same season in hospitals that are being miraculously healed, written in the books. Sutter Memorial Hospital in Carmichael, California, written in the books, miracles. We're talking bleeding and hemorrhaging of the brain down the spine, a newborn baby instantly restored, healed. All kinds of miracles that they could not figure out what happened. And my daughter came 11 weeks early, weighing 2 pounds and 2 ounces. And she came out quadriplegic and brain dead. And it was chicken pox. My first wife got chicken pox during when the brain is forming. And it went for the baby's brain and just continued to eat away the brain. So I'm sitting there crying out to God to heal my daughter, and my daughter dies in my arms. Oh, man. Now, this is tough, because I go ballistic after this, because now in my mind, I've done everything God told me to do, and he couldn't even save my own daughter. So I was a very extreme guy. It was kind of like, you know, the gloves are, I'm putting my fighting gloves on against God, right? You just come on down, God, and you fight me. Look what you did to me. So there was always this overtone of a mocking father, and always a carrot that I could never obtain. Yeah. It was just never good enough. Because of my perception of myself and my history, I saw the father through that twisted imagery.
Yeah.
And so I would go up and down, back and forth. I would get up and serve God, and I'd run from God. And the prophets would say, there goes Jonah, you know? And then I'd come back with a greater anointing than I had before without any intercession or prayer or fasting. I thought, what is going on here, God? How can you bless me? I'm not worthy to be loved, but I'm going to show you I'm worthy, and I'm going to keep trying harder. I'm going to know the Bible better than anybody. I'm going to prophesy better than anybody. I'm going to be the best preacher ever. I didn't know I was in a competition with myself.
Yeah.
And so I entered the deliverance ministry. I became the poster child for them. Boy, man, when I told them my history, they felt like they had a purpose. And they casted out all the demons, and these are in the days where everything's a demon, right?
I remember.
And and inner healing ministry wasn't widely known. And so anytime I felt rejected, I went to get deliverance. And every time I got delivered, I felt great for about a week. And then I would be back to the rejection. And I love you too, Larry. Mm-hmm. I see Larry out there. And so I would go back, and what they would tell me is, you must have sinned. You've let an open door. It's now 7 times worse. So no matter what I did, it would just get worse. And so religion did play a part in this. I finally was introduced, and I'm skipping forward because this is a long testimony, but just imagine going on ministry. And I think I had three or four ministries that I had already destroyed of my own in the first 17 years of ministry, with a lot of in-betweens and several marriages. Now, my firstborn dies in my arms.
Yes.
My second born, I have 3 more children with the first wife. Okay. And we were only married 4 years. So 4 kids in 4 years. And that's staying busy, right?
Yeah, that's good.
And But all this self-destructive behavior that I was operating at a subconscious level that I had no understanding what was going on. And I'm going through the deliverance ministry during this time. So of course everybody had a demon, including my wife, and, which helped to destroy that marriage. But, in the process of it, my second born, that would be, Stephen was born, and I couldn't connect with him. I had no idea till I looked back that I was fearful of losing a child. And so right. Even though I loved him, I couldn't fully bond because there was a belief that if I bonded, he would die or something would happen.
Yeah.
Because I was so deeply bonded to my daughter Anne. And so of course this is all by hindsight. I didn't see that till 20 years later.
Yeah.
But during this time, I finally bonded when he was 10 months of age. And then I dropped him off at my mom's house for a few hours while we went out for my birthday. And I had no idea, my mom being where she was at in her mindset, who didn't believe I was grown up enough to take care of a child. And she was on some arthritis medication, but there were other people in the house there to help supervise and all of that. So I come back about 4 hours later and my son's not there. I said, "Where's my son?" "Well, I thought you abandoned him." So I called CPS.
Oh, no.
And so I went to CPS and they interviewed me and I gave them, I thought, well, I'll be a testimony. I'll tell them everything I came out of and what the Father has done in my life. So I told him how I came out of the occult and heard demons, mm-hmm. see angels, and how God set me free. And that didn't go over well. I fought for 2 years to get my son back, and he was adopted out.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, and so there's a lot of money to be made through CPS, just so you know. So I lost my second one, then the third and the fourth. By this time, I'm just having kids saying in my mind, in my own brokenness and trying to protect myself with anger, well, I'll just have another kid, try to take this one kind of attitude.
Yeah.
And so I had two more, and we ended up divorcing right around the time my mother died. And at 53, I was blamed by my family for cursing her to death. Because I had foreseen her dying and I didn't know why I was foreseeing it. And there was a move of God that broke out and hit my mom and my two younger brothers, and they awakened into Christ. They Wow. came to Christ. And it was only about a month later that a friend of theirs that was very religious came into their life and said, "Well, this might not be God. This might be the devil." Remember, Brian was in the occult.
Yeah.
And so they renounced their faith and came against me. And I was in the garage at the time at my mother's house playing darts. And there was a knock at the garage door, and it was a bunch of Hell's Angels that this her friend was friends with that sent over, and they were threatening me. So I called the police, armed myself with an old pair of nunchucks that was some of my old stuff in a box in storage in the garage. And the police came, and they happened to know one of the bikers there who was an ex-police officer. And he said, "Oh, Brian's in there holding his family hostage."
Oh my God.
And so I was arrested for nunchucks and thrown in jail. And because I didn't believe I could ever be vindicated on my own or the Father would actually rescue me at this point, I took a felony on my record of possession of a deadly weapon. And this fast forwarded into a lot more self-destructive behavior. So when my mother passed not long after that, mm-hmm. I was accused of cursing her because I had told my family I saw mom dying. And at the time, my mindset was, "You've touched God's anointed,"
right?
You know, and so that's probably why she died, you know. And of course, my family didn't see it that way, and I no longer see it that way.
Yes.
And so fast forwarding. I ended up getting custody of my daughters, and because I couldn't do it alone, I ended up in another relationship and I got married again. And it was a very abusive, physically and emotionally abusive relationship where, let's just say this, she knew martial arts and I knew how to break dance. So you can kind of find out who won, you know. So yeah. it was a crazy, crazy time in my life. And anyway, she was choking me one day and I called the police. I pushed her out the front door, shut the door and called the police. And they came and they said, we're going to take you both in and we're going to take your kids to CPS. And I said, no, just take me, whatever. You can just take me. And so I took the brunt of what was done to me, ended up with another felony on my record. Why? Because they looked up the previous and said, oh, well, he was holding his family hostage here. Even though my wife told him, no, he's not holding this hostage. It's these people. And they just said, oh, you've just been threatened and abused and he's made you say these things. And so now I'm back in and I didn't want to stay in. So I took a felony and went to anger management classes for 52 weeks.
Wow.
I think I've got a bachelor's degree in anger management classes because it wasn't the first time. When the nunchucks was 52 weeks, with this was 52 weeks. And at the end of it, I was still in denial that I had any anger issues. So they made me do 52 more weeks.
Oh my gosh, man.
Yes. I was stubborn, man.
There's probably nobody on the planet that's done 3 years.
Well, I tell you what, I became teacher's pet by the end of it. You know,
you learned a little.
I sat there for the first year saying, I'm not angry. It's amazing how you can't see yourself.
Yeah.
And so through all of that, my ex-wife, while I was in jail, took my children and ran and was able to get custody because neither their mother, my kid's mother, or me was available to go to court. Oh. So she took custody of my kids and abused them for 11 years before I saw them again. Wow. And to get them on SSI to make money off of them. And so what did I do when that relationship ended? Well, I couldn't be alone. My whole identity was in everybody but me.
Yeah.
And so what did I do? I found another woman and found her at a karaoke bar. And by the way, all of my exes were witches that I was converting to Jesus because I just thought, well, at least they're not cookie cutter Christians that are going to freak out if they stub a toe. I figure I need to get somebody that's been through it and see them saved, you know? So yeah. I had this need to fix people and to rescue people. I'm sharing all of this because this is really important to get of how the grace of God actually operated through all of this.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you all this with not one bit of regret or shame. Yeah. You know, I would not change my history for anybody or any reason because of where I'm at now in the revelation of the Father's love.
Yeah.
And I walk through, I'll just sum it up. I walk through 5 marriages in under 10 years. Now, all the pastors that I had kind of gone to their churches and been a part of, we don't want you prophesying here, brother. You know, you can't say or do anything here, you know. And it finally came to a head when I was called into, and I would say this is midway. This isn't even after wife number 5. This is probably wife number 3. I was called in to a pastor's office at a church I was visiting. I won't mention names or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I go in there and every pastor in the city is in that room. And they immediately open to the scripture about false prophets. Wow. And I had just kind of pulled myself up by my bootstraps already just to serve the Lord again where I had failed him.
Yeah.
And so they told me that I couldn't be saved, that I was definitely, it was just beyond that. It was evidence that I had an antichrist spirit and that there was no hope for me and it'd be better if I hung myself. And these are spirit-filled charismatic pastors that were connected wow. with ministries today that have the Father's heart.
Wow.
And so I looked up to these men. And so I took the bait. I actually believed, wow, maybe I am the Antichrist. Maybe I am a false prophet and I can't be saved. So I went to a hotel and attempted to kill myself. I tried to hang myself, but what I hooked it to broke and it just left a rope burn on my neck, you know?
Thank you, Jesus.
And yes, glory to God for that. And yes. And so I was homeless, and so that's where I ended up in another relationship. And this goes on up until I would say about 17 years in the ministry, 18 and a half years awakened in Christ. And I had come across, I was with wife number four, and the marriage was going to end. She said, you need to go get some counseling. So I went and I found a counselor, and I had no idea they were doing what was called theophostic ministry, which is now called transformation prayer ministry with Dr. Ed Smith.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there with my arms folded with this look on my face like, yeah, right. And they say to me, the guy says to me, so do you believe you're going to get some healing as we sit here? And I said, nope. Because I went to deliverance ministry over and over again, and that was a sham. Why should it work now? And he says, well, how does that make you feel? I had no idea he was already doing a session on me.
Yeah.
And I was taken into the memory, and it was a memory that through word of mouth lie that we believe. You know, you can have a lie you believe based on what somebody else tells you. And because I wasn't physically watching my dad kick my mother in the stomach when I was in the womb, I was still told that.
Right.
And so I'm taken into a word picture of my dad kicking my mother in the stomach. And I see Jesus step in front of her and stand there like Superman, taking every punch and not even breaking a sweat. He's not even budging until my dad falls down exhausted in this vision. And then Jesus turned around and grabbed my mom's belly in her hands, looked into there and looked in my eyes. And I was like, I was inside looking. And he said, you're not an accident. I have called you. I have given you a purpose. And this big burden broke off of me, this lie that I had no purpose. Because see, when you don't believe you have a purpose, you just keep self-destructing.
Yeah.
It's a self-sabotage. And then you're trying to prove to yourself you have a purpose, but you can't believe it.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of it. I was now hooked on this ministry. And so I went as often as I could. I got, I don't know, close to 20 hours of inner healing done on me. And I got all the videos and the books and I became the poster child. And so I went around and I taught hundreds of people at a time how to do this. And it became actually a profession. To where I did it 40 hours a week on people with tremendous results. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Mm. And that was the beginning of it. But I still had areas that inner healing sessions would not work on. It's amazing how God has to sometimes take you into a life experience outside of a closed room session to apply the revelation of who he is in the midst of your contradiction. Mm-hmm. And so... So of course that marriage still ended. We invited a lady in with wife number four. We invited a lady in that was broken and had multiple personalities. She took over the whole house and took over my wife in the sense of using her own woundedness to make a connection there. And they ended up running off together and becoming gay and took my son from that relationship, Gabriel, and he was only 10 months old. Now, by this time, I again, now you got to realize every time I finally made a connection with my children, it would be a matter of weeks before they were taken. So now remember, God's called me as a father, a father to many. He's called me to restore marriages. He's called me to bring unity in the church. I would walk into a church in the area that didn't know me. I would sit down. Next thing you know, an usher would be coming to me saying, "How you doing, sir? What? It's nice to meet you. What's your name?" Brian Christian. Oh, okay. And then I'd be watching him talk into the ear of the pastor across the room. And then the pastor would come and tell me, "We're sorry, you're not welcome here."
Man.
And so this was my experience. And so I was, you know, the whole city of Sacramento handed me over to Satan for the destruction of my flesh and pretty much handed me over to what I had already handed myself over to, not even knowing it. And so as time went on here, I ended up meeting wife number five. And that was the only one that I actually was in submission to authority, being prepared as a pastor at a church in San Jose. All the other ones was me running from God and finding a wife. Mm. And what's funny is I didn't want to fornicate, so I married him. That was the, you know, so I married all my dates pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so it's funny now when you look back on it.
Not
and
them.
So and so this is a woman that wasn't a witch in the background, a classy woman, businesswoman, had it all together, very calm and collective. And the pastor just kind of confirmed, "You guys are called to walk together." And so I just thought, okay, this has to be God, because this time there's a pastor in my life and there's, you know, authority in my life. And I really want to get this right this time. And so I did it. And, we never even had an argument in that marriage. There was no connection.
Wow.
I mean, come on, you know, if you're in love, you're going to have an argument just because you love each other enough to have one, a healthy one, you know, but there was no argument. And that marriage ended after a year. And it wasn't long after that Shauna and I met. And, or actually we met at the church and we had known each other for a year that led up to us, coming together. And so you can imagine I had no faith in this marriage working.
No.
And so fast forwarding, we take our RV and we get married and we head to Texas. We've been in an RV our entire marriage. The one we're currently in is covered with solar panels and we travel all over the world in it, or all over America in it.
Yeah.
And so
hopefully to Canada in the future.
That's what we're believing for. Yep. I have a word for Canada. So
I'm excited about it, man.
Yes. And so it was a journey that led us out into the middle of Amarillo, Texas, away from everybody. And the reason we had to get an RV and split immediately was because my previous team of leaders at the church I was pastoring, where the move of God was, that was with wife number five, that was totally destroyed. They got it in their mind that it would be better to kill me, that God spoke to them to kill me because my anointing was now given to them. So, you know, the scripture that says he that kills you will think he's doing God's service. I lived that scripture. Holy so I was God. Living in some heavy duty first century biblical Christianity, and I was tripping out. So I'm getting phone calls from unknown numbers playing back to me conversations I had in private in my room on a phone. And I'm getting pictures sent to me from outside my window. I'm getting, threats, three strikes, you're out. We're coming for you. I had no idea it was my previous team that I had raised up in ministry and had a lot of freedom, who knew my history and knew everything and said, "Brother, we receive you. We see the love of God on you." Mm. And what was their last thing they said to me when they handed me a painting of Peter sinking in the water, outside the boat, you know, the scene where this is lifting him up. They got me. It was a pastor's appreciation day. And so they threw this surprise party and gave me a painting. And they said, looked at me and said, "We'll never deny you." And I thought to myself, uh-oh, I don't like hearing that one.
No.
Well, not long after they pledged. I had a brother, a prophet who wasn't even around or knew anything was going on. I hadn't talked to in a year, call me and say, brother, you need to leave the city. It's not your time. And somebody's going to try to kill you. And, I didn't want to leave the city. And I'm just like, that's just one person, you know, maybe he missed it. And then I have another brother who's actually friends with the people that were plotting this and actually overheard them talk about it in from another room. He was asked to go in the back room because the meeting hadn't started yet and they were having a leadership meeting and he heard them plotting to kill me. So he called me and said it. That's what rushed Shauna and I, the wife I'm with presently, that's what led us to get an RV and split. Okay. Mm. And so we get to Texas out in the middle of Amarillo. And I'm now at this point ready to crumble. I've held it together. I did not want my new bride to have to deal with all of my baggage. So I'm just holding it together. And with all those arrows in my back, I finally let loose. Now you got to realize my wife, all she known is the man of God that moves his arm and people fall out and he speaks a word and they get healed. And we've had personal conversations and she's known my journey, but she's not been with me. She doesn't right. know my moods. She doesn't know what I'm going through. And she's a new believer.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, I'm completely, you know, curled up in a corner, depressed and suicidal for the next, for the first 9 months of our marriage.
Wow.
And I kept telling her, you just better leave. You know, we would get in arguments and I would just say, well, there's the door. Don't let the Lord hit you where the good Lord split you. There's the door, you know. And finally she said, you know what? Fine, I'm leaving. And I wish she was in here to tell this story because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. She's driving down the road crying. Why did you do this to me? God, you tricked me. All of this stuff. And God says to her, go back and love him. And she came back and she came in and what did I say? Oh, you back for more? Couldn't get enough, huh? And she looks at me with tears in her eyes and she just says, I love you. It doesn't matter what you do. I know who you are in the spirit. I know who you are. And I crumbled. It was the first time I had ever experienced that.
Wow.
And my wife was determined to love me through everything I hated about me. And she did. She did. And it was amazing. And that's why we're married after 12 and a half years, you know. And I'm going to tell you that first year to even 2 years was difficult with me trying to gauge waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
So after 4 years, we're like, hey, man, we need to celebrate. The cycle is broken. You know, we can finally, you know, cut loose and relax. I did not want to have any more kids. I hadn't seen any of my kids. I tried finding them. Didn't know where they were at. Nothing was, you know, couldn't do anything. And so I had this shame to have any more children. Because I thought to myself, well, if I have children and love new children and I haven't loved my old children, it's not right.
Yeah.
It's not right. And so my wife being young, I mean, she's 13 years younger than me, 12 and a half, technically 12 and a half years. And, you know, she wants children and I want to give her children, but I'm afraid either she's going to leave me as soon as we have a child or something's going to happen, you know, yeah. or I haven't. How can I love these new children without loving my other children? And so I was stuck in this place of daily weeping. Anytime I saw parents playing with their kids outside, crying out for God to bring me my children. And ultimately we ended up moving back from Texas. A move of God broke out in Texas for just a 3-month move amongst Baptists and conservatives. And the glory of God poured out. And the Father brought me out of that depression and began to give me another level of understanding. Now, you got to understand, I had already been ministering that we came from eternity, that we came from being in the Father, that we were sent as Jesus was sent. I had a lot of revelation of sonship. I moved in glory realms. I seen the dead raised. I mean, I prayed three different times and saw the dead raised. Okay.
Wow.
And I mean, it was an amazing, all kinds of amazing things. And I looked at what I was called to do as proof of who I am. And what I was called to do qualified me. And so I did a lot of doing to avoid looking at myself because I didn't want to see something terrible. I was afraid to look at myself. And I want to backtrack a little bit to that move of God in San Jose, because I was under Bill Johnson's ministry and I was being fathered by a spiritual son there. And we were having coffee and he said, so Brian, tell me, who are you? Mm. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, tell me, who are you in God? And so he let me go on for 20 minutes. I'm an apostle. I'm a prophet. I'm a reformer. And after I was all done, he's all, well, that's great what you're called to do, but who are you? And I couldn't answer him. I could give the generic term, well, I'm a son, but I didn't even know what that looked like.
Yeah.
And yet I had been preaching sonship. And he goes, well, don't worry about it. Just go home and pray. So, you know, God will tell you and just get back to me. So I went home and I prayed. Okay. And I'm ready to quit the ministry. I'm not qualified. I don't even know who I am. How can I oversee a move of God? You know? And so I'm praying and God brings to my mind everything I'd ever done wrong in my life, every sin I'd ever committed, every failure, every fault, every weakness. And I begin to say, God, I thought you forgave me. You're supposed to cast that into the sea of forgetfulness. Have I been deceived this whole time that I've never been forgiven? And I heard the Father laugh and he said, look again. And I looked and I saw how the Father's expression of love had never changed, no matter what I did. And he said, son, this is what I've always looked like. But I wanted to prove my love to you, because you can't just stand on a principle you read. You have to walk out the proof of my love. And he said, I don't regret your past. Why do you? And I said, but who am I? And he said, you're a grace bearer. I've called you to carry my grace to this generation. And he said, this is why I let you walk wounded in your ministry, because there are so many ministers that are broken and feel disqualified and feel they can't tell anybody or they'll lose their ministry. He says, I've called you to them too.
Wow.
Now, remember, I'm still about to go through another divorce there, right? Not long after that. And all these people wanting to, or about eight people planning to kill me. So we skip off, you know, I get married to Shauna. We take off to Amarillo, Texas. We see this move of God. We come back to California, establish another ministry. And that's when we say, wow, let's celebrate, man. I think the cycle is broken. Well, there was a couple people that just for the sake of protecting their identity, I won't mention anything beyond that. But there were a couple people that didn't like my freedom from the past, didn't like seeing me blessed, and held things against me. Well, these people plotted. So they called the police and told them I did terrible things to them. So the police show up at my door literally days after we just celebrated that the cycle is broken. Shauna is now pregnant at this time. She's about almost 9 months, about 8 months pregnant with our son, Aiden. Okay. And he's, this would be back in 2011, October of 2011.
Wow.
And so the cops come to my door and I'm like, yes, what can I do for you? And they said, do you have any weapons on you? And I knew right then what that meant. I said, no, sir. They said, put your hands behind your back. We're going to take you downtown to question you. You're not being arrested. They just tell you that so you won't fight. You are being arrested.
Yeah, that's the hands behind the back.
Yes. And so they take me down and they tell me, you know, we're searching your house right now. We found this, we found that. They're lying to me the whole time to see if I'm going to confess to a crime that I didn't commit, right?
Yeah.
And I had no idea they can lie to you. And so I'm like, what? Really? Well, I don't know what you're talking about. But I talked to him for 2 hours and I told without a lawyer. And, well, they used all of that because it just sounded so out there. They used all that to arrest me. So I was arrested and I sat inside for 40 days and, my bail was $1 million. Now you got to realize this is in Santa Clara County, California, mm-hmm. where it is the 98% success rate of conviction in the nation. The one place you don't want to go to jail is Santa Clara County. California has more prisons than all the states put together. It is the prison state.
Wow.
And so I'm in there and I get out on Benny Hinn's birthday. I thought that was kind of crazy. And it was 40 days in, went to my bail hearing. And, we asked if they could drop the bail down to 500,000. I didn't even have money for it, but God was speaking to a, bail bondsman and that couldn't sleep. And he just felt like he was supposed to only ask for 5,000 to get me out and just make payments on the rest. I think I had to come up with 7,000 a week after I got out, and God blessed me with 7,000. And then I was going to make payments and fight this thing from the outside. And, well, anyway, I'm in the court and the DA isn't bringing up any of the charges against me. The DA is jumping up and screaming, he's a false prophet. He's a charlatan. He can't be let go. Yes. So I was in there for charges that didn't even really apply to me because they couldn't charge me with being in the ministry. So yeah, my even the trial and all of that was all about being a false prophet. Now, what's amazing here is the bail was reduced because they brought religion into it. The judge said, well, you just violated his amendment, right? And so I'm going to go ahead and give it to him. And so I bailed out. And I was out for my wife, for our son being born. What's crazy is 1 year before this happened, before I was knew I was going to jail, a friend of mine had a dream. And in the dream, it was a courtroom, but it was a church. He said, I don't know why, but it was like a church courtroom. And there were all these big screens, big, huge screens, like at football fields, all around the room. And it was all different scenes of you and how God had been faithful to you throughout the years. But you were standing right in the middle up on this platform in white, and you just had your eyes closed and you were looking up. Just eyes closed, just total peace. And everybody around was saying, guilty, guilty, guilty. But a voice came from heaven that said, vindicated, innocent. And so I just thought it was the courts of heaven teaching that was going around in those days. I had no idea that I was about to literally walk through that scenario. And so bailing out, I thought I'm out for the duration here. We can push the court thing forward, get enough evidence to protect ourselves, prove, you know, in the court of law, you got to prove your innocence now.
Right.
And 2 weeks before I even got arrested or knew what was going on, I had a vision. See, Shauna had miscarried the previous baby. So she had a fear of losing this one, and she's about ready to give birth, and she's kind of afraid of complications. She's asleep next to me. I'm watching TV. I like to stay up late. And I'm sitting there and I have this vision. In the vision, I see us. I know exactly what the room looks like, the smells in the room, the birth, everything is flowing. Everything is good. But there's this glowing red light in the background. I was like, why is there a glowing red light in the background? But I woke her up right then. I said, honey, it's all going to be good. It's going to work out. The baby's going to be fine. Aiden's going to be fine. So we're all excited about that. We celebrate. And then I get arrested, right?
Yeah.
And I'm standing on being there for my wife to deliver, right? And, or for me to be there when she delivers. And so So when I'm in there and I'm crying out to God, I end up getting out and we're all excited. And so I get out, I think it was a week after I got out, I got a call from my attorney because at the time it was one person that had come against me. And that person went out and got the second person after I got out. So they put out a warrant to rearrest me. Well, I got the tip from my attorney and this is right before Christmas time. And, my next due date, to come into court was, beginning of January. So I thought, you know what? I'm legal to not be found until my court date, even if they're looking for me. So we actually, we were actually planning on leaving the next day to go to a friend's house and kind of hang out there, use their car, use their phone, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, the whole hood and big dark sunglasses deal. You know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to skip court, but I believed I was supposed to be out for my son's birth. And so we get a call first thing in the morning from a restricted number. My attorney said, don't answer restricted numbers because it's the DA wanting to get evidence against you. And I felt I had to answer it. Well, it was the manager of the RV park where we were at. And we were in a single wide mobile home at that time. We had let go of our fifth wheel. Anyway, she said, you need to get out of there. Did you miss your court date? I said, why? She said, because there's 25 SWAT behind your RV and they're pulling out vests and guns and they're headed your way. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? My wife can barely walk. She's like wobbling, right? Waddling around, you know? And yeah. I said, honey, take the keys, go get the car. You go ahead and head over to the mall. I'm going to meet you there somehow. And I ran out the door and started because they were behind me. So I was able to get out the door, run down the street. The main street was literally probably 20 yards away. And right on the corner was a Midas oil place, you know, brake system, yep. Oil auto place. And I just ran right past it. I'm running down the street and the Lord said, stop, go back to the Midas, sit down. It's all windows in there. Sit down, grab a magazine and tell them that you're waiting for your friend to come and get an oil change. I said, what? I said, okay. So I did, I sat down and I told him that, well, I can view the cops, you know, coming, going through the doors. I'm watching it right, literally 20 yards away. And so I'm sitting there, you know, and all of a sudden a dream came to me. I very rarely dream. A dream came to me from, I would say about 2 years before that was happening. And it was a dream where cops were after me and I was scooting down in the back of my friend's car. My friend David, who had the old Victorian Fed car with the cage and the lights and you know how they'll sell those off to regular people.
Yeah.
And he has one of those. Well, in the dream, I was going past the cops and escaping in his car. So then I realized, oh, that's the friend that's supposed to come over here to get the oil change. So I called up my friend David, woke him up and said, hey, can you drive your cop car over here and pick me up? And so he did. And I literally lived out that dream, scooting down into the back and going right past the cops.
Jeez.
We get out of town. And, you know, at this point, the cops are looking everywhere. They're tracking my phone. They've got warrants out publicly that I'm armed and dangerous, all kinds of stuff. And I'm hiding out and I've got a throwaway phone and I'm using somebody else's car. Well, we can't go to the hospital that we normally would go to because they already know that Sean is connected to that Kaiser hospital and they're going to find me. So the Lord said, go to this city over here. It was a completely different city based on a vision I had 3 years prior of seeing a glory realm on that city that I thought I was supposed to plant a church in.
Right.
And we go there. We go now. If you know anything about all the Kaisers, they're all hooked together. The moment you register and get set up in there, it goes to all of them, and it's all hooked in. Also, to if you have a warrant out for your arrest, they get notified.
Oh no.
Okay. And so we go in and we pray, Lord, don't let the system put our name through. So we go in, she's having contractions. They check her, they register her, and they say, look, you ain't ready yet. Come back in 2 days or come back tomorrow and we'll check you again. So we left, we came back, and they said, for some reason, you're not in the system. We don't understand why your registry is not here. You came in yesterday? We said, yes, we did. So they registered us again, checked and said, nope, you're only at 2 centimeters. Try coming back tomorrow. So we left again. We came back, and of course, we were not in the registry again. And this time, she was ready. So we went upstairs. We had our son, and everything was exactly the way it was in the vision I had. You know what the red light was that I couldn't figure out? That was when I was locked up at night. There's a red light they turn on that glows. I had no idea that the vision I was seeing was me locked up, but coming out to the birth of my son.
Oh my gosh.
And so all of these things begin to click together, you know, but the gist of it is, after my son was born, I only got to be with him for 7 days. We were in the hospital and I decided to turn on my phone to check messages, and they tracked me. Next thing you know, I hear the nurses in the hallway naming my name, Shauna's name. Yes, we will hold them. You're 5 minutes out or 15 minutes out. We'll hold them. And then I look out the door and the nurse sees me and goes and tells the security guy there, whispers in his ear, and they both look at me. So I already know what's going on here. And, you know, my son has those things wrapped on his leg, you know, the monitor, so you can't take off with your kid. So here's an amazing revelation here, a story, testimony. I'm like, we got to get out of here. And we're waiting for the paperwork. We already filled out everything. We're waiting for them to bring it back to us. So the nurse that knows what's going on and the security guard are standing there. The nurse goes on her break. As she leaves, the security guard is distracted with a guy behind him. And another nurse is getting ready to go on break and is bringing me the paperwork. So I said, hey, since you're on your way out, can you wheel us out? Wheel this right past everybody. I get down, pull the car forward. I'm sure the nurse was tripping out as I just kind of grabbed my wife and my son. Let's go. You know, pretty much everybody's flying in the car at once. And as soon as we get in the car and shut the door, the cops pull up behind us. And because it's not my car that they have an APB out on, we just drive right off. And I'm able to spend 7 days with my son. And on the 8th day, I went to court and I was rearrested and was charged with 365 years to life. And this is what I was facing. Man. With no deals, no plea bargains. And this time I wasn't going to take a bargain anyway. The other two times I was going to take I took deals, remember?
Yep.
And so I ain't going to take a deal. And so I sat in there. I had a public defender. Now, you got to understand, I'm in there. The first 6 months in there, I'm doing my warfare. I'm binding demons. I'm commanding the system, the Babylonian system, to let me go and God judge it. Blah, blah. That's where all the charges came from, by the way. I didn't start out with that. I started out with about, I don't know, I think it was 8 years is what they were trying to give me. And every time I would pray against the system, more charges would be added. Anytime I had a breakthrough in the presence of God, more charges would be added. Anytime I would get a sense of peace that I would ever be free, more charges would be added. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, God, what do you want me to do here? And because I'm dealing with injustice. My whole life has been injustice.
About injustice, yeah.
And now I'm determined, Lord, where's my justice? And it took me, I finally came to the point where my mind split. People are screaming in all the cells. People are going out in body bags. They're killing themselves left and right. There were some dirty cops in there that were letting certain inmates out into other inmate cells to shank them. with homemade knives. This came out later, 2 years after I got out. It was on the news from that jail where three officers were put away for life for beating to death a mentally ill inmate. It was those officers. They were running they were running the area where I was at. It was a miracle I wasn't killed.
Man.
And so I started getting really suicidal. And my mind started to split. I actually started, because I was in like a 23-hour lockdown. And I was in a place where I couldn't really tell the difference between reality and fantasy. I didn't know if I had been in there for years and that I had just been transferred from a mental hospital and had made up my whole life. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Wow.
And they medicate me and they mix the meds to where I started hemorrhaging. And come to find out, the two meds they mixed was supposed to kill me. Again, I'm not paranoid at like them planning to do this. These are just things that were happening, right?
Yeah.
And so I came to the point where I couldn't even believe that God existed anymore. It wasn't even anger at God. It was, man, I'm just a mental case. I don't even know what's real and what's not. And so I started working out, becoming dangerous, and became a trustee. And I'm just going to, you know what, I'm going to survive. You know, what is it? Kill or be killed, right?
Yep.
And so I started getting hardened by the system. So I was pretty big, man. I wasn't as big as this brother here, but I was about 220, I'd say, about 220.
This isn't muscle. This is power at rest.
Hey, it works, brother. But you know, there was, no matter how much I couldn't believe that there was a God anymore, there was still this little flicker in me that wouldn't go away. Just this tiny little possibility that God was real. And I remember I was big, I was buffed. I now had all the goods. They called me shot caller in that area of the jail. And I ran that side. And, I was coming out of my cell one day and the presence of God hit me and I fell to my knees and I realized his love again. And it was so real. And I said, God, I'm sorry. I failed you. I have no faith. And he said, that's okay, son, take mine. And he gave me the scripture, though you are faithless, I abide faithful. And I was so like free in that moment. And I came out of my cell just so excited. I had to go down and wash tables. You know, being a trustee, you got to do the cleaning.
Right.
And there were other people that are allowed out. Well, there was a guy that wanted me to let him out the day before, and I didn't. So he was holding a grudge. Well, somebody else let him out. I had no idea what he intended to do. 2 minutes after that breakthrough, I'm laying on the ground. He came up behind me, hit me in the back of the head when the cop wasn't watching, and started kicking my teeth out of my face. And so my face is all split open. I'm laying on the ground, teeth just dangling. And, you know, you're both pulled out of there. I'm put in a cold room. They put you in a cold room naked so that you won't fight. And, you know, it's got glass all around it. So you're shamed by everybody walking by, male and female officers. And I'm sitting in there freezing. I said, God, I just had a breakthrough. You know, I'm a trustee. I had some freedoms. I had a breakthrough. You know, I thought you were with me. And he said, I have other sheep for you. Well, I didn't know I was going to be transferred to B dorm, which they call bad boy dorm for those that get in fights. Well, thank God no charges were added. The other gentleman got three strikes for what he did. He was on his second strike. He got a third strike. And so they put me in this new pod. It's called a pod, upper and lower tier, about 90 inmates with an officer that sits in the corner at a desk. And I go in there and with no teeth. And I told my wife years ago, if I ever lost my teeth, don't ever expect me to preach. I ain't preaching with no teeth, God.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in there with teeth, one tooth just dangling and other two teeth missing, mouth all swollen up. The moment I walked in there, I began to prophesy. I began to prophesy to all these different inmates, and I found a group of Hispanic brothers. Half of them couldn't even speak English, but one of the brothers, Victor, who's my spiritual son, and he got out a year after me, who I'm still connected with. He could translate for them. And they had all been crying out, "Lord, send us a spiritual father. Send us somebody who can help us break through. We don't know how to access the heavenlies." And I was sent there.
Wow.
And we ended up seeing a move of God break out in there to such a degree that people that didn't even believe in God were having visions, dreams, oil pouring out of their foreheads. Gold was embedded all inside my cell, all over the walls, the floor. There was a cloud that stayed suspended in the middle of my cell 24/7. It was this flat saucer cloud, strangest thing. And at night, when that red light would come on, there would be this golden wing that would hang out of it. And this wasn't a vision. This was in the natural. And I remember that golden wing would scare me. I'm like, what is this? Mm. And on the third night, I said, "Who are you?" And this angel stepped out, came to me. And he said, "I'm the angel that came to Gideon. I'm the angel that came to Samson's mother. My name is Miracle Justice, and I'm here to deliver you." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh!" And me and my cellmate Victor both encountered this angel at the same time. And so, I know we're probably going over time. I don't want to take.
You're good. Go ahead.
Okay. And so, so immediately after the angel said, "I'm here to deliver you," and it's at night, it's pitch black outside in the main room, you know, and sometimes the officers are in there, sometimes they're not. All of a sudden my door clicks open and I'm thinking to myself, is this like a Peter experience where all the guards are going to be asleep? And I'm thinking to myself, they got a lot better technology today. They're going to catch me a lot quicker than back in those days.
Yeah.
And so the door clicked open and I step out and I hear the officer say, "Christian," because they call you by your last name in there.
Yeah.
"Christian, come on up here and sign this. You got more charges."
No.
Yeah. Every time I'd have a breakthrough, because in the back of my mind, I still needed justice. I still needed justice.
Yeah.
But Victor and I, we spent hours and hours. We both became trustees. The father moved on the entire place. One of the officers that didn't even like me came to me on Christmas. I said, "Father, all I can think about is my wife, my son. I need a new experience this Christmas. I need a new experience. I need a new memory." And the officer came and opened our door and said, "I know you're a preacher. Come on out. Anybody that wants to listen to you preach can come out of their cell." 70 out of 90 gave their lives to Christ. I only had 10 minutes to share and to pray. And they all gave their lives to Christ.
Wow.
Now, there were many in there. Okay, I'm telling you, I'm in the side of the lifer side. Everybody that's in there is facing more than either from 70 years all the way up to 500 years. I have no idea why they give you 500 years.
I don't know. Just means you're never getting out, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm in there and I'm hearing their stories, and I know at least half of them are innocent. And I'm looking at their paperwork saying, "Man, your paperwork looks better than mine. And they gave you 70 years and they were losing. They were losing." So I asked them, I asked God, I said, "God, where's the justice?" He said, "Ask them if they've ever had a prophetic word over their life." So I asked them and they said, "No, what's a prophetic word?" And so I called up Shauna, my wife, and I said, "Type out every prophetic word I've ever received and send it into me." And so she sent in some prophecies, and there was this one that really, a part of it that really, I got it years before I was even married to Shauna. But in this was the prophet part of the prophecy, because I'm looking at prophetic words here for ministry and the difference between ministry and being with your family. Because the father had been speaking to me at this time, and he said, because I said, "God, I just don't understand. There's no way, you know, had I not, you know, known these people, they wouldn't have done this to me. Had I done this different, this would, you know," we go through all of that.
Yeah.
And the father said, you'd have been in here anyway, son. I said, why? He said, did I not call you for a revival? I said, yeah. He said, I said, yeah, you did call me for a revival. He said, did I say where? Don't you know that I called you here and that it's not about a guilty thing or an innocent thing? And that's when I asked for the prophecies. And one of the prophetic words, and this is the part that really touched my heart. In the prophecy, it says, you have come to a Red Sea. And there are no open doors. There is no way out. But Father God has seen the love you and your wife have. And he is going to come down and create a door where there was no door. And you're going to cross over the through the Red Sea and even over the Jordan into a double portion Canaan land. And when that touched me, I held that. I held on to that. Yeah. But I had to first come to the end of needing to be delivered. And I did. It was the most glorious experience I had ever experienced in my life. In the presence of God behind those bars. Wow. Coming to the place where a little tiny pencil and a scripture is priceless. Yeah. I mean, if you can get a Bible, a lot of times you can't. And so just to have a Bible, just to have a pencil is like a lot. And there's no smells in there. You're not going to see any glitter. There's no place you can have a sign and a wonder of God. We can read into so many things around us because we're constantly bombarded with imagery, but take all of that away and just have white walls with recycled air. And you realize, wow, when a sign and a wonder comes into that, you know, it's a sign. And so trial was being set. My attorney said, who was a public defender, all the public defenders in there were all friends with the DA and the judge. And so, you know, the inmates called them public pretenders.
Yeah.
And so everybody's always firing their lawyer. And the Lord told me, you're not going to fire any lawyer. You're going to take the one I give you. And that's going to be your Cyrus. So it's funny because I would go and see my lawyer. And she was a 6 foot tall, you know, white, I mean, like ghost white Irish woman with bright green eyes and, you know, a fiery lady too, but she had never gone to trial.
Oh no.
But thankfully she was being, mentored by another lawyer that was my lawyer in the beginning, a gentleman that had gone to several trials. He had been promoted to murder trials. And so, you know, she was taking over for him and he was helping supervise it. And so she told me straight up, I'm telling you right now, it's all a drama act in the court. It isn't about innocence and guilt. It's about who can put on the better show. And you have about a 2% chance of winning. And so I want to make sure we get a just judge. And she's backlogged. So if you're willing to sit here, and I was about 8 months in at the time, and that basically sit there. The total time I was in was 17 months. So, you know, do the math there, you know, and so about another 9 months or so. And, somewhere around there. And I said, whatever it takes. And so I just lived life in there in the glory. And there was a lot of miracles and healings, and a lot of some of the stuff I taught was typed out and brought in, and it ended up spreading and being rewritten and spread. And a move of God broke out in two jails and a prison, in different locations due to the move of the Spirit that was happening in our little area. And, you know, I told people I was a preacher and they say, oh, you're a jail preacher, huh? Yeah. We know jail preachers. You're all godly on the inside till you get back out. Right. And I said, no, I was a real preacher. And people didn't believe me. And, you know, when the father told me you're going home, and I would tell people, yeah, I'm going home. They just looked at me like I was nuts. Yeah, sure. Sure. You're innocent. Sure. You're going home. Sure. You're a preacher. Mm. Well, the trial began, and, all I would say before I would go into that room every time is, Father, let only that which the blood has spoken be heard in the courtroom. Because I had come to the place where it wasn't about justice. It wasn't about injustice. It was simply about being where the Father wanted me and being willing to walk through it. I remember calling Shauna, my wife, saying, honey, I can't endure this anymore. Your letters, the pictures, I can't put you through this anymore. You need to let me go. You need to go find a good man that'll raise our child and be a good husband to you. And you need to let me go because I'm never coming home. And my wife said to me, I will be there 2 days a week for the rest of our lives. Now, this is the kind of stuff where you don't get any physical contact. It's behind glass forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't ever change. And she refused. And, you know, everybody around me, their girlfriends are cheating on them all of a sudden, leaving them, you know, so all of the opposite is happening around me. And so this was the big moment to see there was still that other shoe that needed to drop.
Yeah.
We'll see if my wife. Yep. We'll see if my wife leaves this time. Mm. This will be the one that makes her leave. Then it'll prove I'm not worthy of love. Right. And so through this whole situation, I go to the trial and my judge is Judge Deborah. That's her name. Deborah the judge. It's all female. So I had a female attorney, a female DA, and a female judge. Now, when my attorney said, okay, we're gonna choose your jury. Normally you get 90 people to choose from and that's it. And my attorney pushed for 180 because of how much time I was looking at. A lot of the trials that were lost by other inmates was because they rushed through the pretrial selection.
Yeah.
And I did actually get a word from the Lord for my lawyer saying, can I be a part of this process? And she said, yes. And I said, look, we're looking for engineers as our jurors. And she said, engineers, why? Because they look for evidence.
Mm, that's good, man.
Well, come to find out, 10 out of 12 of our jury was engineers. And I would pick them out. And there were some people in there. She goes, well, that would make a good one that was smiling at me. And I said, nope, that one has been injured and wants justice. And I'm the scapegoat. And as soon as the charges were read, sure enough, she wanted in. Thank God we didn't choose her.
Wow.
So this was supposed to be a 3 to 4 month trial. It was a big one. A lot of specialists coming in and a lot of people on my behalf. Well, what do you think the DA is going to do? Well, the DA knows that if they can't catch me on what they're charging me with, they got to get me on something. So all my exes are brought in.
Oh, no.
Now, thankfully, there was only one sent in a written statement and then two others actually showed up. And, oh boy. Oh yeah. So they get up claiming all of this abuse that all of a sudden is tied into all the charges against me, which makes no sense whatsoever. And, the end of the matter, and this is what is amazing is, a person that was with the victim, I guess we call it the victim, right? The one that, is bringing you to court and what you've supposedly done to him. This person had their father there with them or a father figure of some sort. And right in the middle of her testimony, he came up to the DA and said, I'm changing sides. That person is lying.
Wow.
Changing sides. It was a father figure that came in and changed sides right there in the court. And I mean, they were caught and everything. They finally all admitted right there on the stand that they had made it up. And I was vindicated and set free, but I didn't know I was free yet. The courts were closed that day. After that session in court, I had no idea that my attorney called my wife and said, he's going to be released tomorrow, but don't tell him anything. He needs to rest, which I'm glad nobody told me. And I went back to my cell and rested. Next morning, I go into court and I see the door opening, you know, out of the courtroom, and I can see all my family and friends out there with tears in their eyes. What are they doing here? They can't come to this, especially if they're witnesses. And that's when the DA stood up and said, we cannot bring any charges. Come to find out, it was the testimony that I gave to the officers that vindicated me as well, because they never investigated it. And so when they finally checked into it and saw that I was telling the truth, and seeing that mixed with the people on the stand that were against me that are now confessing that they lied, I was vindicated and released. So I'm not released right there. I got to go back through the process, right? So it's like 10 in the morning. I don't get back till like after 7 at night, or get out until after 7 at night.
Yeah.
But I go back and it's early afternoon. Everybody's kind of sleeping in their cells, but I can see people's faces pushed up against their little window of their door, and they're whispering, "Christian, what happened?" Because they're getting ready to go to trial. And I looked at the officer and I said, "Can I say it?" He said, "Yeah." And I just lifted my hands and I yelled, "Vindicated. I'm going home." And people began to weep all over the entire jail. And when everybody got out for their out time that afternoon, people that totally had mocked me the whole time I was in there came to me asking for prayer, asking for me to pray for them and minister to them. And I was out that night. Now, what you got to realize, I went in at 150 pounds. I came out at 220, and I'm trying to put on the original clothes I came in with. Either that or a paper suit. And I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's raining outside. You don't want to wear a paper suit. So
no.
So
the Red Sea was parted.
That's right. So I'm holding my jeans, you know, together because I can't button them. And I'm kind of waddling out stiff-legged. And as I'm waddling out to go down this hallway to finally see my wife and hold her for the first time in 17 months, I heard the father say, "You will never doubt me again, son. You will never struggle again. I had to put you in a position to where you could not deliver yourself so that I could show you that I am faithful and that I am your deliverer." And it broke off of me any need to measure up from that day forward. When I came out of that and I hugged my wife and our lives began again, it wasn't over. I ended up having to walk through post PTSD for another year that I had no clue that I had. I couldn't leave small areas. I was I was claustrophobic of large spaces. Any sounds I heard, I thought I was being attacked. Any police sirens, you know, I thought
coming to get you.
Yep, it's time to go. And so we came, when I came out, you know, at this point, you know, my wife was bankrupt and we were all bankrupt because of all the fees and all the money and the bail bonds and all of that. They still wanted it paid back. So we had to go bankrupt and we're staying at her mom's house, her parents' house. Wow. They their eyes aren't open to spiritual things. So they just thought I was kind of crazy anyway. But we're sitting there and I just prophesied right in front of her mom, who doesn't believe in that. And I just looked out and said, in 2 weeks, I have faith for $50,000. In 2 weeks, I'm going to have a motor home and we're going to be going to North Carolina, you know? And, within a few days, a friend of mine called me and, said, you know, the Lord's been speaking to me that I'm supposed to help you with something. And I said, well, I've got faith for $50,000 and I'm going to get a motorhome. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to travel to North Carolina. And she goes, well, I ain't got faith for $50,000, but let's look for something for $20,000 and I'll put down the deposit and you just make the monthly payments when you can. And I said, well, let's go look. So I found an RV online, flew to Texas where she was at. This was, by the way, that move of God that happened in Texas for 2 months.
Yeah.
Out of all of that, one lady stayed our friend who financed later this RV. See how important it is to stay connected, because you don't know what the Father's doing in the next place as well. And so We go to go get this RV. It just sold 2 hours before. Now, remember, when I was in, I didn't share this part. When I was locked up, I kept getting 227 and 27, 227 and 27. Had no idea why I kept saying. I thought it was my release date, but it wasn't. Well, when we go to look at the RV, it's on exit 27. And so, and it's funny because the RV wasn't available. It just sold. And we found another one for $42,000, some odd cents, whatever. Yeah. But when you added up all those numbers, it was the number 27. There was my two 27s. And so I looked at my friend and she said, well, let's see what we can finance it for. And sure enough, we could get it for pretty cheap. I think it was 12,000 down and 180 a month for 20 years. So I thought, I think we could do that. No penalties if you get off early, you know? And so, I get it. And we drive off and, 2 weeks to the day, we drive in and there's a lot more miracles that happened around that. We took off to North Carolina and that's where I entered my post-traumatic stress syndrome, year. And I went back into the dumps, but not as far as I did before. And just more in my mind. I wasn't, you know, acting out anything. It was just in my mind. But my wife was so gracious to be a support to me. And, you know, they say you can overcome post-traumatic if you'll have family around you that will understand your journey and just simply walk with you through it. And so I made it through that year. And it was, I would say, on my birthday, the following year on my birthday, because I got out in May, my birthday's in June, and a year of post-traumatic. And a friend of mine I hadn't heard from called. And she says, I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. And I said, well, thank you. And all of a sudden, the glory of God poured out on me. And I was instantly, it was like the timing, all the post-traumatic left. I was set free and the father said, I want you to go on Facebook. I said, I hate Facebook. Facebook sucks. Yeah. It's all a bunch of drama. I'd already like destroyed, you know, shut my account down before. I had like 50 friends. Nobody ever talked to me. And so it's like, forget it. He said, go on Facebook. So I go on Facebook and I end up in a group and all of a sudden I'm just prophesying and flowing. Well, long story short, 500 people became my friends. They wanted me to start a group. So I started a group. So this move of God ended up breaking out within literally, I think 24 hours, we had 2,000 people and these weren't people we invited or added. We just opened the group for the original ones that wanted it and everybody else just was drawn. There were miracles happening all over in this group. And that's where Father of Glory encounters began that led later to Father of Glory Global Ministries because people started sowing to us. And I didn't even have a ministry set up. I just had a Facebook group. And so I thought, well, we'll just see how this goes. And so we incorporated and set everything up. And as the ministry started to kind of, you know, go through a season of quietness online after a couple of years, the Lord said to me, he said, well, it's time to find them face to face. And he reminded me of the encounter I had in jail where I was... I had a vision of all of these RVs going down the road and it was a mobile community that was taking over whole entire cities with the power of God. In this vision, the news crews showed up and we would come in and we would take over whole entire mall parking lots and we would erect tents. And it wasn't just your standard, okay, everybody, you go out on the street and evangelize, you go and promote this. It wasn't even like that. It was so organic that it was simply the people were drawn because they saw love to such a degree. I mean, we were getting out of each other, our RVs, coming and hugging each other in this drunken glory love.
Yeah.
And
which I got to experience.
Yes. And the news crew was coming saying, and they were saying stuff like, so you've never met these people. You just sold your home, got an RV, and took off across several states to go be with people you don't even know. Why? And they would say, because of the love of God. I'm compelled. I can't be conformed to religion anymore. I have to experience his love. And it was just this radiant, holy madness of love.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. And it was just instant miracles. And people were like looking from afar saying, is the circus in town? What's going on here? But as they, you know, but as they drew closer, they were like, this is what I've wanted my entire life. All yeah. I've wanted is to be a part of a family. All I've wanted is to be loved. And that is why we got that motor home. Yeah. And so we were expecting to launch out immediately and travel all over the nation and do all of that. But instead, God keeps us in North Carolina, hidden with Facebook ministry, brings us back to California, hidden mm-hmm. on Facebook ministry. And then I start actually launching out and flying around to different places doing conferences with some of those I connected. So there was a season there mm-hmm. in 2015. And then I was out flying around. I'm teaching on love, unity, family. And one day the Lord, I come home and my wife's worn out and the kids are upset and, you know, and you can tell that she's just not happy with me flying around, but she ain't going to say nothing because she's just too gracious for that, you know?
Yeah.
And the Lord said to me, son, you're a hypocrite. I said, what do you mean? I'm doing what you called me to do. He said, I never called you to go by yourself. How can you go out and preach unity and family and leave your family at home? You need to come up with a better way. And so now there was provision coming in through that too, that was helping us. So I shut it down immediately. I canceled all flights that I could not get money back on. And I canceled all of it and I shut it all down and I sat there and did ministry on Facebook. And I said, okay, Father, I will never again fly out without my family with me. And that's when I think it was Tiny House Nation was becoming big. I started seeing these off-grid setups. And so we finally came to the point where we're like, let's take our month's worth of rent. Cause I don't know if you've ever rented at an RV park in the Bay Area, but you're talking no. $1,200 a month. Jeez. And that was then. It's now up to $1,800 a month by the ocean. And so we took $1,200, invested in some cheap batteries and four solar panels. And we just stayed around the city. My wife was working at a preschool at the time. And I now have Aiden and Seth at this, or wait, no, I only had Aiden in the beginning. That's right. Mm-hmm. I only had Aiden in the beginning of this. Seth wasn't here yet. I don't think, not yet. And no, he was. We ended up getting the solar later on. It wasn't until 2016, I believe, 2017. Yeah, it was 2017 we did it. And so we go off grid and we stay in the area so she can work. So you got to imagine this. There's only one rest stop in the entire region and everybody lives there that's homeless. And so you only have so many parking spots and you got to get there by 2. And you're only allowed 8 hours or the cops will give you a ticket. So you got to be out really first thing in the morning. And so I went from the rest stop to, this will make sense in a moment here. I went to the rest stop to the Target store or no, to the Lowe's, home improvement to the Target store. And I would have to move 3 times a day or, you know, the 2 stores every day and then stay overnight at the rest stop. Okay. So I had to do that, a 20-mile radius. Okay. And so we did that for a year. Okay.
Wow.
And
every day.
And I'm the stay at home dad doing Facebook ministry and Sean and my wife is working at a preschool. And I'm taking care of two boys, which I totally was glad I was the stay-at-home dad. I got to be with my boys. So that was amazing. Mm. But what was funny is I'm kind of complaining to God. I said, well, God, when you gave me the vision to launch out, I was expecting a little bit more than a 20-mile radius for, you know. And he's all, well, when you get the revelation, you can expand to a greater radius. And I said, what do you mean? And then I saw it. He said, you got to go low at Lowe's to hit the target at Target to enter my rest at the rest stop.
And just like God, eh?
Yes. And jeez, all of that was in preparation because I had no idea that my whole paradigm was about to change. Because all the revelations on eternity and sonship that I had now accumulated and come into over all those contradictions I walked out was now about to break open a whole new dimension of grace that I had not even seen before. And that was the realm of the quantum realm, as well as, what I believe is everybody is included in Christ. Yes. I don't believe anybody is left out. I think people are asleep, and we are to awaken them, but all those that are awake and asleep are in him. And that Jesus, what he did on the cross, carries a lot more greater of an impact than what has been preached. And it has been reduced in watered down in some areas, yeah, of more of a performance-based, Christianity. And I'm not claiming universalism here.
No, I know.
But ultimate reconciliation, you know what I'm talking about, is the, yeah, earliest teaching in the early church. And so I start coming into this, and I'm kind of afraid to now minister to my other Christian friends about these things, you know. And yeah. but to sum it up, in June of 2018, Shauna left her job. At this point, I had stepped out of ministry for 1 year and was working in an RV park, the one we were staying at, so I didn't have to pay rent. And I was working there, and I ended up, that job ended, and we took off, and the Lord said, now's the time. And God waited for every door to close, all the finances to dry up, and he says, now go. I said, well, where are we supposed to go? We had just connected with a friend of ours in Washington who was a single mom with disabled kids. And so the Lord said, I want you to go up there, and I want you to fix her fence, fix some of the things in her house that need to be fixed, and love on her kids. And I said, but Father, I thought you called me all around the nation. And now this woman is completely isolated too. Okay. and so we spend, we have $4,000 from our tax return. So we it's $1,000 to get up there in gas. Okay. In our other RV, our Winnebago.
Yep.
And, so we get up there, we park in front of her house. I try to fix her fence. I kind of make it worse. But I minister to her kids. And we just sat in the RV and got drunk in the spirit, right? For like a week. And through that, basically what happened, long story short, there's a lot more details, but I know it's just going to take too long. What we were drinking in the spirit, and that glory began to come out of the RV, go down the streets, hit the Walmart, and hit the entire region. And people were being drawn from all over. The power got hit in a matter of 3 more weeks. 8 were ordained, established. 2 hubs were raised up, and the move of God began to manifest. All of this is happening on Facebook, and it's all happening in homes as well. You know, so we're videoing what's going on there. And next thing you know, a family in Minnesota, 3 generations worth of family in Minnesota, call us up and say, we'd like you to come can you do here what you did there? And you got to understand, not everybody was on the same page in this 3 generations of family,
no,
you know, and, you know, some look at, you know, shaking and manifesting the glory as, that's just emotionalism, while others just want to go fishing, you know, and go, you know, watch the game. Right.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot of that going on. And what God did in 6 weeks in Washington, he did in 6 days in Minnesota. Imagine 3 generations of family completely moving as one mind and one heart and reconciling without counseling, without inner healing, just the everlasting gospel of Christ.
Wow.
And so then other people caught wind of it. And next thing you know, we're going all over the nation. And what's amazing about this is,
yes,
what would happen when we would get together. We were in a meeting just like New York, brother. There was another meeting in, where was it? It was Alabama, out in the middle of nowhere at a dear lady's house. Everybody calls Mama Faye.
Yeah.
And I remember all of these people that were bound in religiosity, self-condemned, came into a room. Nobody knew anybody. I think I had only just made a few announcements and said, let's fellowship for a bit. I'm telling you, within 20 minutes, they were all weeping, sharing their deepest secrets with one another. At the end of that conference, Mama Faye came up to me with tears. She says, I have nothing to give you except a mother's blessing. And I said, I'll take it. That's the best thing you could ever give me. And she said, we have preached in this house for 12 years. And we've preached about love and unity, but this is the first time I've ever seen it manifest like this. And it's an amazing thing because I'm not preaching really much different than I am. A few adjustments, but it's the frequency and the sound that you're carrying.
Yes.
Through a contradictory history in which you've seen the Father come in and prove who he is in action without your ability to rise to the occasion. And that became the catalyst for the sound of heaven to penetrate the hearts of the people.
Yeah.
And so it has been an amazing journey in which I can truly say I have a maintenance-free marriage. I have a maintenance-free ministry. There is no burnout. There is no measuring up. And I'll tell you what, man, everything flows as though it's normal. It's almost like the vision we first had when we were born again, that we actually believed that we were new creations. And and then we thought maybe not when all hell broke loose. But I tell you what, I feel so new in his grace from day to day. And no matter what comes my way now, nothing takes me down. I don't even have to try to overcome. I'm literally just walking in the bliss of his union and of his grace and of his love.
Wow. Brother, it's amazing. You know what? I hate to do this to you, but you got to tell that one story where God said, I want you to go to this guy's house. You didn't even know where you were going, the address or anything.
Okay.
Do you mind doing that at the end?
No, I can do that story. All right.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a powerful.
I'm glad you remind me. So
that's okay. No, it was.
So now this is you got to go back to, a lot of the landmarks in my life was based in which wife I was with. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I know. That's funny.
Maybe I misunderstood the Bible when he said, he that loses his life shall find one. Maybe I thought he said he that loses his wife will find one, but I don't know what I was thinking, but, wife number four, this is before she took off with another woman and went into the gay lifestyle.
Right.
It was actually right after that. I was kicked out of that apartment before they both took off. And so she told me to leave or she was going to call the police on me. And so I left and, I had nowhere to go. And, we're talking a block size or, a whole block size apartment complex. Like it takes up an entire city block. It's huge. And, so we were on one side. And so the Lord told me, I want you to go to, number seven. I want you to go to apartment number seven. I said, why? He says, I want you to go knock on the door. Cause now you're homeless. You got no place to stay. I tried staying in the van out in the parking lot and the police came and knocked on it and said, I couldn't stay there. And so he said, go to apartment number seven and just tell him your story. So I went to apartment number seven and this kind of burly big guy with red hair and big eyes, big blue eyes. You know, they're scary. Redheads are scary looking sometimes. And
yeah.
And, and I'm a redhead, or at least I used to be. Now I'm a redhead. All dead. So he answers the door just kind of with this look on his face, like, it better be good, brother. You just interrupted my TV show kind of expression.
Yikes.
And I said, I know you don't know me. He goes, yeah, I've seen you around. What do you need? He goes, well, I just feel like I knocked on your door because God told me to tell you my story. So he's just standing there, like, make it quick. And I just gave him the rundown of all that I had just walked through. And that God told me to come to him and that, I told him a few encounters I had and he got goosebumps on his arms and his hair's all stand up. He looks at his arm and he says, come on in, man. I tell you what, man, I've been in situations of being down and out. You can stay on my couch for 3 days until, you know, find until you can find a place, but only 3 days. I said, all right, man, that's fine. And, you know, I noticed I'm looking up on the wall and there's a cabinet there, and he's got, you know, all these videos and books, and he's got three kids. One's like, I want to say one was 2 years old, two-year-old little boy. He had a 2 year old little girl, a 5 year old boy, and an 11 year old girl. And he's a single dad. Okay. And he's got full custody of the kids, and he works for Verizon. But I noticed up on the wall there, he had all these like porn videos, DVDs and VHS and, you know, a bunch of other stuff up there. And, you know, and he sat down and he noticed me look. He goes, yeah, I watched that. What's up? The kids are in bed when I watched that. And I didn't say anything because I needed a place to stay for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Well, I just was like, whatever, man, I'm just going to sit here. And, you know, I'm still going through the shock of my wife, you know, kicking me out and literally feeling physically ill from everything I'd just gone through.
Yeah.
And, anyway, he even told me because I had told him I was, you know, a preacher, and he said, well, I don't want to hear any of that preacher stuff. I don't want to hear you ain't praying for me. I ain't falling down. I ain't doing any of that weird stuff. I don't believe in any of that. You know, I'm my own person and that's it, you know? And I said, fine, that's fine, brother. No problem. You know? And you know, every now and again, his kids would peek from around the corner and kind of look in and smile at me, but they really wouldn't come in, you know? And, he was the kind of guy that this is my space, that's your space, you know? And, mm-hmm. and so you could see the kids had a lot of woundedness from the divorce and the loss of their mom and all of that, and probably his temper, 'cause he had one. And so he was medicated. He had a back injury. He was medicated, and he was getting high, and he was on antidepressants and all of this. So I'm just literally sitting there. And, you know, for 3 days, I'm just sitting there pretty much most of the time, just with my eyes closed, just meditating internally, because I don't want to upset this guy or say the wrong thing. And he might beat me up or something. Out of nowhere, a cloud manifests right in the middle of the living room. I mean, we're just sitting there and this cloud just breaks open like a burst right in the middle of the living room, and the guy falls to his knees right there and begins to weep. So I get up and I just say, well, I guess I can pray now. And I went over and I just started prophesying over him and just speaking life over him. And his kids come in and they fall out and begin to speak in tongues and get touched. The 11-year-old girl was taken into heaven, having all of these encounters. All right. Mm. By the end of that encounter, we got up and we watched the cloud go through the wall into the neighbor's apartment. So we ran outside and we stood outside their door waiting to see what would happen. I mean, I literally expected something to happen. I didn't know what. Next thing you know, the door opens and these two young guys in their early 20s come barreling out really fast going, do you see that, man? Do you see what that is? What is that? What is that? As this cloud is in the middle of their living room. Well, the one young guy had blue hair. They were, he was in a punk rock band. The other guy was just like to drink alcohol. I don't think he was in any band, but they were brothers. And I look at the young guy with blue hair, and right in the midst of this, kind of funny, I don't mention the cloud, even though I saw it. I said, yes, the cloud is there. That's the glory of God. And I looked at him and I told him the dream he had the night before. I said, this is the dream you had the night before, and this is the interpretation. And it was basically all connected to his commissioning and calling in God. And he didn't even know anything about God. Neither one of them were believers. And a wind, it was a completely warm, still day. A wind comes through the hallway, knocks them to the ground, and they're just shaking on the ground. Well, this turns into a movement that actually enables me to get my apartment back when my ex takes off, and get one of these guys become my roommate, and five other guys show up, and we ended up having glory for, I don't know, another, I think it was about 10 months just in from that first experience. But this guy goes in his house, the redheaded guy, and he starts taking all of his porn down and throwing it away, and all of his drugs and throwing it away. And he became my intercessor. He was completely devoted, drove me to, and we just launched out. And that's actually from there was what led us to San Jose, California, to begin doing ministry there that led to me actually meeting my wife in the first place.
Wow. That's a crazy story, Matt. God is amazing, isn't he?
He is amazing. He is amazing.
What year was that, Brian? Would you remember at all what year that was?
I would say it was 2001, 2002, right around there. Wow. Yeah, I think it was the close of 2001 and the beginning of 2002.
Wow.
Yes.
It's kind of wild, isn't it? That's when we started Highlands Christian Ministries, and it was during that time when things were breaking out for us with the joy and everything. And
wow.
It's really cool to see what the Lord was doing. Thank you so much for sharing your testimony, man. I know you shortened it down because I know it's a lot, but it was powerful. It's powerful about the grace of God.
Yes. You know, thank you for having me.
And that whole thing of just, you know, again, bringing you to the place of realizing, you know, God loved you right from the beginning. It never had anything about what you were doing, but who you were.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know what? So the outcome is I'm now a father of many.
Yeah.
I have natural and spiritual kids. Many marriages have actually been being restored. And everywhere we go, there's unity in the body. The very thing the Father promised me. He said, son, here's who you are. But then I had no idea that I actually had to walk through the belief systems of the people I would come into contact with to carry the sound they presently believe with the sound of the Father's love in the midst of it so that they could actually come into that awakening and be revitalized. So all of it was God.
Powerful.
All of it was used for God. And I just appreciate everybody listening and taking the time in this. My book has, in the first chapter, is an overview of kind of a basic testimony. I am going to write another book for those in prison and prison of emotions as well as in prison. And it's going to be called Doing Time Outside of Time, that will have my entire testimony. But what's amazing is my book, The Everlasting Gospel of Christ, is actually in the two jails that I was held in. Wow. Is now being distributed in the downtown jail as well as the, they call it the farm, the one on the other side of town.
Wow. Yeah, you can get that on Amazon, correct?
Yes.
The book.
Yes. The Everlasting Gospel of Christ, Identity from an Eternal Perspective.
Yeah. It's good, man. We'll have to have you back sometime. We can just kind of flow in some of the revelation and stuff that God has given you. And there, beautiful. Thank you, Corey. Yes. There we go. You can see it. But it was, I really wanted people to be able to have this so people would get to know a little bit about you and where you've come from and why you're a wild man in the glory.
Yes. That's why I love so deeply, because I've been deeply forgiven.
Yes. I mean, the Lord told me one time, John, the foundations of these things is, who am I and who are you?
Yes.
And it's like you got to get that straightened out. And once you have that, you're able to begin to walk as a son, begin to understand a lot more of who he is, you know, by his character. And his character doesn't change, which helps you then not to be deceived by spirits of religion, you know, which come with a form of godliness, but they do not have the love of God, you know, they don't have that presence of the love of God. And, you know, it can either be a religious spirit or just in the soul of the man, you know?
That's right.
And that's kind of where we are in these days, is God is waking us up to my presence is me in the present, God himself,
right.
You know?
That's right.
And I really appreciate you sharing tonight, and, we love you and Shauna, and maybe the next time she can come on with you. But the next time, we'll make sure you're in a city where you're hooked up to the internet. That's why tonight we had to do it audio like this, because it would have been too broken. But it worked out great. Thank you, Corey.
And thank you, Corey, for the wonderful
And also,
picture.
Too, Yeah. Also, too, we want to encourage you guys just to check out his website, www.foggm.org. You can give there. There's a PayPal button. Bless these guys. Help them to continue to do what God has spoken.
Yeah.
One of the things that me and John talk about all the time is, you know, if you were blessed tonight, if you received something, you know, honor and give. Because, you know, if we went and received a beautiful meal at a restaurant, we
couldn't leave without doing the dishes, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, we didn't just eat tonight, but we heard a clearer picture of who the Father is and what He does. And I believe that, you know, if you were touched, also share, join Brian's page. You know, the more that we connect with people who carry the sound of heaven, the more the sound spreads.
Yeah.
And we need a new frequency. We need rest and love and joy and peace and grace to rule and reign, especially in this hour.
Yes.
Frequency of the Father. Frequency of the heart of the Father. You know?
That's right.
So, guys, make sure you check out his website. And you also do live casts and all sorts
all
of stuff.
Time,
so you guys can get whatever you're looking for there. So
bless you, man.
Yes, you can find us. You can find a pod. We have a Podbean podcast. You can download the app on Podbean. Just look for Father of Glory. We have a YouTube channel, and you can, all my posts and videos are public on Facebook. So if I can't add you, since I am pretty close to my limit, you can still follow and still get all the stuff.
All right. Well, bless you, man. Thank you again so much for coming on tonight, and give Sean a hug for us. And
definitely. Right. We appreciate you both. Thank you guys so much. We love you, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon, Brian.
All right.
Bye-bye.